Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This is where I talk kind of weekly, try to do it Tuesday at 2 o'clock, where I answer questions and just like chat about different things. Today, I'm going to enjoy myself a root beer liquid death. This is the drink of the summer, the different flavors of liquid death that just came out. So cheers to everybody for joining. Should take a drink. And I have a schedule for today. Before I do, I also want to mention tomorrow at 6 p.m. Pacific, I'm going to do a live show with Chris Davis. And the reason I started this during COVID, doing a series of speakers talking to river guides for river guide training, like how do we learn from experts? And so my goal is to bring experts on the show to talk specifically to professional river guides. Now, as a private boater, I'm sure there's stuff in here that's useful. I just feel like better guide education is important. I'm going to do what I can to help with that. Chris did a show about drowning and CPR during COVID. It was a great show. I just listened to it again the other day. And I thought I'd bring him on just to get an update to see what the latest and greatest in terms of handling drowning victims on the river, what the latest techniques are. And I have some questions as I've been thinking about this a lot. So tomorrow, 6 p.m., I'm going to do that. And hopefully every couple of weeks, we continue this river guide education series. We're going to see how that goes. So that's tomorrow night at 6. And then I want to talk about our sponsor, River Hardware, really quick. And we have a product, the Perfect Paddling Fleece. And those of you that don't know, River Hardware is my online store. I really enjoy it. It's fun. Our customer service sucks. If you want to talk to a person, email the person, don't buy from us. If you want to do a return, do not buy from us. We have the worst customer service. What we do have is awesome stuff at a fair price. And this is something, this is a collaborative thing we did with Immersion Research here in Hood River. We made these killer fleeces. And it literally is, in my opinion, the perfect paddling fleece. I've been wearing mine a ton, and it's just a good thickness. It fits under a dry top well, fits under a dry suit. It can be a standalone thing. It's fashionable. It has our Northwest Drafting Company logo on it, which is minimal. It's not over the top, hopefully, and a few different colors, and I'm just jazzed on it. So I just want to share, in case you didn't know we sold this, it's my favorite paddling piece. Is piece the right word? My favorite thing to wear paddling. And, you know, all the fleeces we buy now are, they have hoods and are complicated and zippers and just all thing. This is simple. It's a nice, solid, stretchable, warm thing for paddling. And I've had mine for about a year now, and I really like it. So anyway, just want to throw away a note out there that we sell those, or pretty jazzed about them. And now we're going to answer questions. I want to finish by doing a review of that Grand Canyon flip video, the one with the dory that people keep sending me. So we'll do some video review at the end of that video. I have some thoughts that are not the same as everybody else. So I want to share my thoughts when we get to that. So let's get to questions. The first one, my husband Harry's organizing a Middle Fork trip that puts on July 11th. Oh, sweet date too. That's a great date. It'll be a little lower than average this year. It'll probably be like 2.5 feet, but sweet date. We have a commercial trip launching that same day. I'm launching that same day. I'll be there. He has some questions about the rapids and the upper section that have changed since he last ran it in 2021. He was looking at your write-up from Whitewater Guidebook from 2023. Can you provide more info about the current situation? I mean, I can a little bit. Let me see what my Whitewater Guidebook write-up has, actually. I forgot about that. Let me look it up. Those of you that don't know, Whitewater Guidebook is a website where I have write-ups of a bunch of rivers and there's a whole... If you go back, there's blog. We post the show up there too. So if you want to watch the show, we post it on here. There's blogs on the front page. And then I have river descriptions of a lot of rivers I've done, like random ones, but also the popular ones. And I can't remember when I last updated that, but I have, this is video from last summer, Sulfur Slide, Hulse Half Mile. This is video from last summer I put up there. So when I update, the reason this is helpful is because I update this. Like if it was a book, it'd be set in stone. But I do this and I update it and talk about the landslide in 2023. And then these videos are from last summer. So these are you know, they're not what it is now, but they're last summer. So that wasn't just updating 2023. I continually update that site. So there's a lot of videos about the Rapids. I haven't been out there yet this year, so I can't speak to it. And also it's been high. It's been like 5+ feet a lot of the time. I don't think anybody knows how the Rapids will look. I know that they're cleaning up a little bit. I know at Velvet Falls, there's water going right or left of the rock. So beyond those videos, and they show what the Rapids look like basically the last time I was there, it's going to be somewhat like that, but a different water level, obviously, and they're changing. And I think that's an important thing about the nature of the Middle Fork versus other rivers. Like if you're running the Rogue or like, I don't know, Cataract Canyon, those rivers are pretty stable. You know, you can just, and the flows are usually within a general flow regime in general. You can kind of memorize the lines. You can look in a book and it can tell you where to go. The Middle Fork is a different beast. Like it's never the same flow week to week. And new rapids happen all the time. And they can happen while you're on the trip. You can be out there and a new rapid happens because there's a side cane and blows. Like when I say blow, I mean like a bunch of water comes down and brings rocks in the river. And so the Middle Fork of the Salmon requires you to be able to scout, make decisions, read water. If you want to go on a river that's just like the same all the time, I mean, it's nature. So nothing's the same. I mean, I'm not going to even say anything. It's you're in nature. So things change. But like, if you just want to read a book about how to run the rapids and just follow somebody's instructions on where to go and what to do, that's the Rogue. That's Desolation Canyon. That's other rivers. The Middle Fork is a changing river. And so it requires you to have your own skills to decide when to scout, when to read water, to notice when something's weird. And then choosing your own lines based on looking at a rapid, not just like what the book says to do. And I'm sure like, you know, as a, if you're organizing a trip, you probably have that skill. The question is, does everybody else have that skill? Like as a trip organizer, usually you're very experienced. You know what to do. You can make these decisions. Can you make these decisions on other people's behalf? Right. You can make it for yourself and then perform that, but then can you do it and expect other people to perform? That's a different skill. So I don't know the answer to that, but if your team isn't able to read water and adapt to change, it's maybe not the right team for the Middle Fork. You'll probably be fine because it's probably going to be easy. It's probably not going to change, but you should know there's always a chance rapids change unexpectedly. And again, Velvet, the water went all left of the old rock. The new, well, it's always been there, but like the river completely changed last year. It was going left of this particular rock. Now it's going on both sides and it's going to change every week. It's a new rapid nobody's ever seen every week. And same thing with Hell's Half Mile. It's changed. And so every week, every day from here on through the summer, it's a rapid nobody's ever seen before because it's a new rapid because the rocks have moved. And the water levels are changing every week. So this is along with me saying, I don't know what the rapids are going to look like. And nobody knows. And there's a skill set of running rivers beyond just memorizing lines or doing what the book says that I think is required to run that river effectively. So hopefully that helps. When you say, can you provide more info about the current situation? You can watch videos right now to see what happened yesterday. If somebody gets off the river, they'll post a video. That doesn't mean that's going to be the same on July 11th. It's going to be different than that. So hopefully that helps. I don't have any better information. I'm sorry. Okay. Whoa. Okay. There's a lot. On a recent trip, we had a roar flip in the last wave of a rapid. There was a very short stretch of slack water before the next rapid. The next boat through was running tight and yelled out for the swimmer to swim to them, but super smart. They very quickly got to her and pulled her from the water. The rower of the second boat then jumped out of his boat, leaving the rescued swimmer to take his oars. He climbed onto the upside down boat, flipped it back over, and climbed on. It took him precious time to get the oar situated and be able to row through the next rapid, but literally came within seconds of going sideways over a nasty pour over at the very top of a rapid. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like somebody's a badass. That's kind of what I'm seeing. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right, I'm going to keep reading. While impressed with his athleticism and skill, I was the only one in a group to question his decision to jump into the water so close to the next rapid to right the flipped rat boat while leaving the just rescued swimmer to take his oars and row an unfamiliar boat. I understand that acting quickly to save a person can sometimes put us in dangerous positions, but just like in gear retrieval, I try to make my group understand that the gear is not worth putting your life on the line for. I find myself more and more often yelling to swimmers, just swim either to me. Okay, this is going on and on and on. I see what she's asking, or he's asking, somebody's asking. I think, so yeah, I mean, so a boat flipped, a rower got was close, said, jump on my boat or swim to me, got him in their boat, and then that rower jumped on the upside down boat and or flipped it over, got back in and kept going. And this person is questioning that decision because you could have just let the raft go, right? It's just a raft. And the person who jumped on the raft could have not done it in time, gone in this nasty hole, gotten hurt, flipped. Yeah, that's a judgment call. And unfortunately, like, I don't know what rapid this is. I don't know the situation. Maybe it's not that bad. I mean, if this is most rapids that we commonly run commercially or even run on river trips, I'm pretty comfortable swimming top to bottom. Like, I don't want to, but if I did, I don't think I'm gonna lose my life. And so I might attempt this knowing, like, you know what, if I don't make it, I can swim this rapid top to bottom, or I can just swim halfway down and get out. Like, I'm comfortable swimming. So I get where the point is that, like, it's just a raft, let it go. You know, why put yourself in harm's way, especially on an overnight trip? You're in the wilderness on an overnight trip. Like, if you do get hurt, that really affects everybody because you can't row your boat. You could have to be evacuated. Like, why put yourself out there to do something that's sketchy on a trip like this? At the same time, if that raft goes upside down through the rapid, you could lose equipment. You could lose your groover. You could lose food. You could break a bunch of stuff. And so, like, yes, equipment is definitely less valuable than people's lives. I think whoever this is hopefully made some sort of judgment call. Like, I'm 90% sure I can do this. And in the 10% I don't make it, I feel comfortable with the swim. And then if we don't flip the boat, there's, you know, a 20% chance that we lose something important. Do some quick math and go for it. So I think when we're making decisions like this, it's really hard to give advice because I wasn't there. I don't even know what we're talking about. I think it's worth bringing up, though. Like, yeah, I mean, rescuing equipment is less important to people. So if you have to let the equipment go, let it go. But sometimes if you let equipment go, that boat could go miles, right? And it's just equipment, but it may have somebody's medication. It may have important food. It may have important things you need to keep running the trip that you don't want to lose or break. And so in people's lives, the most important, but sometimes I will take some risk to save equipment knowing that we need that equipment. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully that helps. We're active people who participate in sports are dangerous. We have act in instinct. Our biggest safety is the people around us. In those moments, we sometimes allow ourselves to become separated in our instinct of attempts at rescue. I want to make people understand when it comes to boats and gear, we desperately need to take a moment to assess the situation before acting. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, though, if this guy had taken a moment to assess it, he wouldn't have got the boat in time. Like, if he barely made it, if you take in the moment, you may not have made it. So sometimes acting quickly is helpful, I think. But also, like, yeah, just like, look, like, I do this a lot. Like, in my 20s, I was a rescue squirrel. I would rescue for sure. Nowadays, I would just look at that raft probably and say, yep, that's a bummer. Yep. And then I wouldn't go after it. I would row, I'd follow it and be there to get at the bottom of the rapid. So I think I'm willing to take less risk now than I did then. So I can see both sides. I can see the, hey, let's go be a hero and do something badass, and let's be cautious and not get hurt. And let the gear go. It's a tough call. And I think it's somewhat situationally dependent. And I think it's a percentage odds thing. Like, again, I'm thinking in my head, like, what percent chance am I going to make it? What happens if I don't make it? You know, I'm gonna do some quick risk analysis calculations in my head. I don't know if everybody else does that. And I don't know if my words through this video podcast thing are enough to change anybody's opinion about what's right or not right. Now, if we had video of this, I could, you know, I could give some like, okay, yeah, that's sketchy, or like, yeah, that's not bad. Not, what's the big deal? But with just these words, all I can say is I can see both sides and it makes sense. Below is an article containing a firsthand account of a situation which occurred on the subway. I think maybe the incident resulting in deaths is too fresh to go into detail about it. Maybe the details could eventually be used to express the dangers. Okay, so the article, that's a good point. This is a good point. So you're relating, whoever wrote this comment, you're relating what you saw to what happened on the subway. So for those of you that don't know, my understanding from this article, I know the article, I don't have the link here, but I know the article. It was a subway trip where a boat flipped, if I remember right. Some people swam. Some guy who swam stopped breathing. And so they pulled him over to shore to do CPR. While they did that, not everybody pulled their rafts up. This is right above Ladle, by the way, probably the biggest rapid on the subway at high water. So they're doing CPR. People were so focused on CPR, they pulled the rafts up. One raft came loose and started floating downstream. Some guy named like Rescue Randy or Rescue John, his name Rescue was like, people know him as Rescue so-and-so, decided to go after that boat. Like they got in some other boat and went after it. They flipped above or in Ladle, and then Rescue John or Rescue Randy, whatever his name was, died. Right. So that was a rad that in that case, I mean, that's, you're high water above Ladle. Yeah, I'm not going to do anything rash above there. So like if on your recent trip, what you're talking about is high water above Ladle, yeah, you don't flip the boat, right? And I just don't know where you are to comment to your situation. In the situation they were in, you know, a boat went loose. They followed them in another boat. Yeah, there we go. Somebody wrote Rescue Dan. His name was Rescue Dan. Rescue Dan went to go rescue the boat, right? Well, at that point, I think there was two people on that boat to go rescue the other boat. You're on a one boat trip on a high water river. So that, I don't think I would do that or want anybody to do that because you have no downstream safety. If you then flip, which is likely at high water above a big rapid, there's nobody downstream to get you. It turns out, I think in the article, there were kayakers that helped save them. There were kayakers down there. They were part of a different group that helped them and somehow, but in that case, yeah, that's not good. That's where somebody chose equipment over their personal safety. So I think in the example of what happened with Rescue Dan, I think I would be against going after a boat, especially when you're by yourself. You're the only boat out there, right? Turns out there were boats downstream, but there's no downstream safety for you. In the situation this person explained, I'm assuming there's more boats around. Like if this was the lead boat and there's no downstream safety, I would change my mind. I would say, yeah, that's sketchy, right? Like, so if the lead boat flipped and the person did this superhero thing, right? And there's, and if they don't make it and there's no downstream safety and they'll wash into something big rapid, I would be, yeah, that's dangerous. I'm assuming for some reason there were rafts ahead of them and there was some sort of safety set up. And I'm also assuming for some reason it's not high water. It's not a super hard rapid, right? So I think what's different about the situation, the article is it was big water. There's no downstream safety. There's a big rapid downstream. In your example, because I don't have the details, I'm assuming there's boats downstream. I'm assuming this wasn't a very big rapid. And I'm assuming it wasn't big water. But again, you know what happens when you assume, and I'm only assuming because I don't have the details, right? Like, I think if you had written, hey, this was this rapid at this flow, there was two boats downstream, it would help me a little bit. But anyway, Tim says, looking forward to the whitewater drowning discussion. Been waiting on a deep dive. Yeah, we have another video, Tim. About drowning. If you search Chris Davis drowning Gear Garage, it'll show up. It's great. This will just be a little bit more modern version of it. Wait, that was a long discussion about this one. Hopefully that made sense. I kind of felt like I rambled there, but I guess that's what I do on the show is ramble. So you get what you pay for. Okay, another long one. Reducing strainer hazards on flooding rivers. Okay, I live along a small continuous class 2-3 river in southwest Colorado. Recently, runoff and floodwaters have made the river fun and deep enough to run. River-wide strainers are part of the process. Throughout the years, a few of us in the local boating community have worked to remove them or inform people of their locations. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you live in, yeah, there's strainers. And removing strainers is super controversial. I mean, you're removing fish habitat, you know, I can't say whether it's good or bad to remove strainers. It's an interesting debate. I can see the, if you're on a river that's commercially done or like people do all the time, like if you're on the Arkansas and there's a tree and somebody's likely going to die there, I can see removing it. If it's just some random river that gets done a handful of times a year, I'm not sure you can justify removing strainers. Like you should probably work around them instead of just cutting logs out. Again, you're removing fish habitat, and who deserves the river more, us or the fish? All right, you're just based by removing the strainers, you're saying the river's more important to us than the fish. You're saying that. That's, you know, so it's an interesting debate whether or not we should remove strainers. Okay, anyway, I'm gonna keep reading. We generally approach strainers of different types on a case-by-case basis. Normally we cut manageable chunks of wood out or move them from the river as well as the branches. We let the unsafe and unmanageable piece go and hope it floats away 4-foot pieces. Okay. Yeah. I mean, another thing about when you cut wood out of the river, it can go down and get worse. Like you could have created a big hazard. I've seen it happen. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing of cutting strainers out, but if you're cutting in small pieces, you're being thoughtful about it. That's cool. A small group of newcomers with shiny boats and gear. Uh-oh. These sound like trouble has arrived in the scene, has decided to get involved on their own, which they're allowed to do. It's a free country. I mean, I don't know. They're allowed to. I mean, you may not like their shiny new boats, but I don't know. If you're doing it, they should be able to do it. Anyway, their approach has been to tie anchor the top of the tree to something on shore. My first thoughts are that this is unsafe and creates more risk hazard with the webbing in the river as well as the strainer. The strainers don't get washed away like other methods allow. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't, let me finish. Just want to get your thoughts on approaching and clearing strainers. Okay, so I'm not going to say it's okay to clear strainers because I have my own thoughts about this. You know, if it's somewhere, my opinion is that if it's somewhere where a lot of people boat and just by sheer numbers of people, eventually somebody's going to get caught in it, I'm all for removing it. We're talking about like commonly done commercial runs. Doesn't have to be commercial, but usually it is. The Hood River by my house, is barely done commercially. It's that we do it privately all the time. If there's a tree where it's in the way, we kayak there here all the time. People who aren't very good kayak here more than they should. On that run, I probably remove it. There's a lot of wood there we don't remove, but if it's like, oh, there's that one tree that like somebody's eventually gonna get caught into, I probably would be okay with somebody removing it. I'm not going to say I removed it. I'm okay with somebody removing it. If it's this creek that a handful of people do here and there, it's hard for me to justify removing wood. I personally think that's part of the challenge of the river. You have to portage, or you have to navigate the river with that wood there, knowing that wood is a major hazard. That's just part of the game. I'm just telling you my philosophy when I think about this. So random creek in the middle of nowhere, I don't think we remove wood. We work with it, which means, again, it might be a portage. It might be a really, you might take a harder line just to steer way clear of the wood. Okay. And in terms of them tying it up on shore, that's a pretty standard procedure, actually. When you cut a strainer out to tie it and have it swing on shore. I've seen that done other places. Now, I don't know if it's good or bad where you are, but that keeps it from going downstream and getting lodged somewhere worse. You know, you're taking this wood out, you know, you have to worry about where it's going to end up. And so, I mean, that's another technique I've seen done, you know, and especially in commercial rivers where when dangerous wood gets removed, it gets tied up. So there's no chance it goes down. It makes a worse spot. So I can see that thing. I mean, my thinking is like, try to talk to them. Like, maybe go out and get pizza and like, hey, let's talk about how to manage this place safely together. Yeah, that's all I got for you. All right, moving on. Okay, we ran two boats on the North Fork Yuba from Goodyear Bar on the Maytag run on June 3rd. Sweet. Goodyear's bar run is so cool. The North Yuba is amazing. The lead boat got surfed and we were a bit close. We pursued the swimmer. I had a question about whether we should attempt to bump our friend out of a hydraulic or try to miss him. We hit his boat, but it didn't help him much and we almost lost our line. I thought you'd have some idea about this. Usually we would grab an eddy and try to get a line, but a swimmer was running downstream. We decided we better pursue him first. Yeah, I mean, just in general, in terms of rescue, it's like self, team, bystanders, victim. That's the kind of thing I go by. I don't know. They taught me in a rescue class. I believe in it. There's video that I got sent with this. I saw the video, but I can't show it because it's through Facebook and that's a pain. But basically there was a raft. The lead raft looks like got surfed. One person fell out. One person stayed in the raft. The second raft came down. It's really hard to bump people out of holes. And what happens is you bump them out and then you end up in the hole. So if it was me, I would just run clean. I wouldn't try to bump them out. You're asking for trouble. So I don't think bumping somebody out of a hydraulic, it might work sometimes, but I don't think it's I just haven't seen it be effective. And get self-team bystander victim. Take care of yourself first. Get yourself through the rapid first. And somebody swam. You have a downstream swimmer of everybody. To me, that's red alert. When there's a swimmer ahead of all the boats, that's something that is a heavy duty concern of mine. That's how I think, if you look at flush drownings on the AW database, one of the biggest buckets of how people drown, a lot of it, I think, is just somebody swims ahead of the boat and there's no downstream safety net. And so I use the term close the box. Somebody needs to close the box. And so if there's a swimmer that fell out in the lead boat, that second boat needs to get ahead of them and close the box or save them. So I think you did the right thing by going down and getting, go get the swimmer. The dude in the surf, hey, he's in a surf. Like he's so far so good. The person downstream ahead of the boat, that's my priority. So I'd get them, continue to close the box, which could mean like two people in the R2 boat hanging out, going to like rescue them if the swimmer comes down, and then one person walking back up to do something to help the surf. Which is not always a rope. Like a rope can help, but a rope can also get tangled to make it worse. So I wouldn't automatically throw a rope to somebody getting beat down in the hole. Usually they just pop out eventually. Hopefully that answers your question. The quick answer again is like, just it's a front first boat gets surfed. Just get through the rapid safely, get the swimmer, close the box, and then provide downstream safety, and then try to figure out if you can help them in some way. Dave's got a comment. It's an age-old argument. There is a very old federal law that protects navigable rivers. It basically says that navigable rivers can or shall remain navigable. This is often challenged in courts. My theory is it's better to ask for forgiveness. Jay, it's have to do with wood. You're saying that like we're allowed to remove wood because rivers should remain navigable. I think that's what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I think whether it's legal or not, I think there's an ethical thing. Like who deserves the river more, us or fish? I'm going to say fish. I'm not even a hippie. I'm not even fish. It's their home. We're going into their home. And so we're visitors in their home, on floating on top of their home. So I just think we need to be thoughtful about removing wood. We can't just go remove every piece of wood just because it makes us have more fun. Okay. Oh, I spilled my liquid death. Okay, moving on. Hello, Zach. I've been a big fan of your video trip reports for a long time now. I've noticed you have not made any videos on the main Salmon River from Corn Creek to Cary. Is there a reason for this? I would love to know. Thanks. I mean, honestly, it's just because I haven't done the main Salmon in like 10 years. So if I went and did the main Salmon, yeah, I would do a video trip report probably. But I just haven't been in so long. And because for work, I go to the Middle Fork all the time. That's why I do so many trip reports in the Middle Fork, because I work there and I have a business there. So it's just in the middle of summer, it's not realistic for me to go do the main Salmon when I should be on the Middle Fork where I make a living. That's it. I basically only do video trail reports places I go. And these days, a lot of what I do is for work. I don't do as much fun boating as I used to. I'm doing way more because I'm teaching a lot more courses now. The time I used to spend fun boating gets spent teaching courses. So I'm not traveling as much as I used to doing like private boating, fun boating, which courses are fun. Like guiding is fun. When I say fun boating, I mean just like private boating. Like I have no responsibilities. All right. Places to raft. What are the top five states to go rafting in the US and also top places in South America, Europe, and Asia? Top five states, California, number one. Oregon, number two. California's number one. I think California is the best. Idaho, Oregon. I mean, there's like a four-way tie for second place. West Virginia, Oregon, Idaho. Probably somewhere in the Southeast. Would that be North Carolina, maybe? That gets me to five. Five top five states. I forgot Colorado. I don't know. Colorado's in there somewhere. Top places in South. You know, I have a couple of blog posts. Let me pull them up. Let's see. Add this stage. How do I get rid of this? Move. There we go. So let's point you to two blog posts. Top rafting. Let me see if Google still thinks I have the best blog about top rafting trips. There we go. 10 best rafting trips. So these are, one of the, I've written a bunch of these posts. So best single day trips, the Gauley, Arkansas, Colorado, the East Glacial in Iceland is sweet. Middle Fork, and then best multi-day, Middle Fork of the Salmon, Idaho, Grand Canyon, Arizona, Illinois, Oregon, Upper Tuolumne, best class five trips, Upper Tuolumne, Pie Forks, the Futaleufú, Zambezi, Forks of the Kern. Yeah, okay. But I've written more blogs like this. Where's my, I used to be a number one on Google. It took it away. Top rafting trips and W rafting. Oh, here we go. Let's try this. Let's go best rafting trips. Wow, I'm just getting crushed here. All right, let me just add my domain. I wrote some really good articles about this. W rafting. Where I rate them. And they're legit. Like, it's not just marketing stuff. Did they just take my, oh, here we go. Nope, that's not there. Top. All right, let's try this to Google. Here we go. The world's 13 best multi-day rafting trips. These are the ones in the US and the world I think are the best. And it's very US heavy because we have wilderness. The US, we have wild and scenic rivers. We have wilderness. We protected our land here in the US. So the U.S. has the best overnight trips literally because we protected our land. Middle Fork, Illinois, Colorado, Futaleufú, Tuolumne, Magpie, Rogue, Franklin, Selway, Tat Nasek, Karnali, Nepal, something in Nepal. And then I've done the Kalkam in Siberia. So I put it on there, but like something in Siberia. There's a bunch of rivers in Siberia. It's insane. But of course, we can't go there anymore in the Zambezi. So that's what I think are the best trips around the world, overnight trips. But I also wrote a post. Hopefully I can find it here. Why is it so hard to find? My search engine rankings are getting worse. Top rafting day trips. Let's just do that. Let's see if my blog post comes up. No, why would a guidebook one comes up? Huh. I wrote a really good one. Let me see if I can get it. This way. Oh man, my can't find it. Top rafting day trips and W rafting. It's, I got my name, Northwest Rafting Company. Here we go. Oh no, that's not it. Here we go. Top the 20 best whitewater day trips. Again, I've actually updated this a few times. So like Cherry Creek is amazing, California class five, Zambezi, which was on the multi-day list too, but you can do it as a day trip or multi-day. The Futaleufú, it's a multi-day trip and a day trip. Bokosi, Nepal, something in Nepal. Cal salmon is amazing. California, Upper Yawk, Pennsylvania is a great one. Upper Gauley is classic and amazing. The Wairoa, which I haven't done, but people told me is should be on the list. So I put it there. Chattooga Section 4, classic. Boxhaw in Idaho, Arkansas, Colorado, the Klamath in Oregon, which, yeah, that's crazy. It changed. I haven't updated this yet. The Penobscot in Maine, the Pequari in Costa Rica. I put the Paraguay. I guide trips on Bhutan. It's an amazing river. It's spectacular. So it's not done commonly, but it should be on the list because it's that good. The Ottawa, the East Glacial in Iceland, that's Europe. The Neretva in Bosnia, super cool. South Fork American, Deschutes. And then I have a whole list of honorable mentions of other stuff. So I'll try to figure out how to add. I'll put this in the chat at my work. That's my article. Hopefully that helps. It used to be super easy to find my article on this. It looks like Google doesn't like them as much as they used to. See what Josh says. Important to note that the public land protection mentioned is in jeopardy. Call your reps to ensure it stays that way. Yeah, I don't think we need to get political here. But it doesn't hurt to call your reps and say, hey, public land protection's in jeopardy. Now, I don't think wilderness protections and wild and scenic protections are in jeopardy. And I don't think that public lands that we recreate on right now are, this is my opinion, are in jeopardy. Now, some public lands are, and recognize that public land isn't just like these beautiful places we know. There's a bazillion acres of public land that is just sagebrush desert, or it's like a helium repository. And so they may sell off some public lands. I don't know. I'm not following this carefully, but I don't think the threat is to the places we're recreating. The threat is to, that's just my opinion. The threat is to other places. So doesn't hurt to call your reps to say protect public lands, but I'm not as stressed out as other people are about that topic. Okay. Let's go back here. That's it. So top five states to go rafting. Would be, man, West Virginia has to be on there, California, Idaho has to be there, Colorado probably has to be there, and then it's either Oregon or North Carolina. I don't know. Oregon should be on there too. Oregon's sick. That's why I live here. South America, the foo is like the place everybody goes. Europe, Iceland is cool. Bosnia is cool. I've been those places, so that's why I think that. I think I had some friends going to France this summer. It sounds cool. Asia, we just trips in Bhutan. The rafting there is amazing. Nepal's awesome. There's some rafting in Japan. There's rafting everywhere. I mean, the Turkestan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan are spectacular. Russia, the Siberia is unbelievable. I mean, Asia is amazing. There's rafting everywhere. So hopefully that helps. Okay, we're gonna finish up. I think that's all the questions by doing a video review of this. Let me get it up there. State. Here we go. Let me see if I can make this big. Yes. Okay. So a lot of you have probably seen this. People keep sending this to me wanting to know my opinion or wanting me to do a review. So I'm going to share my opinions. I have some opinions, as you can all imagine. Yeah. And they're probably not what you think. Honestly, because everybody thinks differently. First of all, okay, so this is, I've never done this rapid. I've only done the Grand Canyon at Diamond. There's, for those of you that don't know, there's this dory got stuck on a rock, which that sucks they left it behind. Like, you shouldn't leave a dory behind. And these rafts are missing it at this rapid called Killer Fang. I'm going to try to only say this one time. They have no business being this close to those rocks. There was, from what I can tell, there is 100+ feet of river upstream where they should have just gotten left. And it requires you to do a downstream ferry or just pull ashore. But like, it's shocking to me that they're not making this move. This move is not very hard and slightly irritating to me. And a lot of people, I think too, when you read the comments, there's no, like, all this river up here and higher, they should have been getting left. Okay, so what happens here first, this person jumps from the boat, And a lot of people are upset about this. I think it's smart. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be in a raft that goes up into a dory. There's so many ways you can get hurt or die this way, I think. Like, I don't want to be on that raft hitting that dory. Now, I don't know if I will be that agile or smart to jump off the raft. But if you can get clear of this whole mess, why not? I mean, the swim there is not bad. I mean, a lot of people think it's obscene that this person jumped from the ship, but I mean, get away from this mess. Look at that. Like, it actually turned out to be not bad. That guy, geez. This is what happens when you're on the raft and you see there's a head right there and this boat is about to flip and this person is going to go under the raft, under the dory, could get really hurt or trapped on something. Like, why not jump free, honestly? So, I don't know. A bunch of people are upset that person jumped. I don't know. When you see this swim, I thought, oh man, I don't want to do that. Oh, and the people don't pop up for a while. So yeah, so this is the rapid. Look at all that. There's so much time before that. Like, this lateral right here, hit that with your stern, do a downstream ferry, pull yourself across, or at least do it here. Or now. I mean, at this point, have your boat. I mean, there's so much time here. I don't know how they're not getting left. This is insane how much time there is. This is such an easy move. I don't see how they don't make this move. But anyway, that's my main frustration was, like, make that move early. Like, that person right now should be 20 feet to their left easily. I don't know how they're on the right. And they still make it, but they shouldn't even be that close, right? And that boat, she almost fell out. I mean, she just squared up to that with a downstream angle. But, and now pushing just doesn't work. Like, this is one thing that frustrates me too, is that people who are teaching rowing classes, because we teach rowing classes all the time. And I'm hearing that students who've done other rowing classes, the guides are teaching to push, just push everything. And that's what guides do. Guides push because they memorize a river. They just push. And so they're teaching pushing as a technique. It didn't work. Like, pushing, it turns out, whoever this is, pushing does not work. This person needed to turn around and pull. This is why pushing being your technique is not a good idea. But here's the jump. Your own safety first. Why not? It's not a hard swim. Oh, the oar blade just broke there too. That was fun to watch. So this kayaker, I mean, the swimmer that went down, they're not worried about because it's a chill swim and there's other kayakers down there. I'm gonna turn the audio up because I think the audio is kind of cool here. Okay, here's another issue I have. Why is everybody blowing a whistle? Like, everybody's watching this. Why are we blowing whistles? And there wasn't just one whistle. It was a cacophony of whistles. It just kind of blows my mind how many, like, people are, when an accident happens, like, one whistle, sure. Like, but react. Don't just sit there blowing whistles.
Guys, where are you? Where are the people?
I love that he's counting people. He's like, where are the people? Which they could be in that dory. I mean, luckily they're not, but, like, there's one.
Look at him.
I think I see two.
I got her. I got her.
And so this person's in this weird boil. Their head is either underwater or barely above water. It's just unpleasant. And I guarantee this person's wearing like a little kayak or PFD, a little minimal float PFD.
Grab my boat. Hey, right here.
That eddy line sucks. That's not a fun place to swim.
Right here. Got it. Okay. If I tell you to let go.
Okay, I'm not sure why I throw back. I was probably came off the raft. Yeah, this is a low flow PFD. You notice how it's like kind of sitting high? It's probably not tight.
Okay. See the rope behind you? Get that rope and start pulling on it. She'll be right.
Oh, somebody threw a throwback. That's what that throwback was. And now, like now there's a rope in the water that could tangle her up. Like, I'm not stoked on that.
Okay, you're okay. I got you. That. Stay here. Stay with me. I got you. We're taking.
That's where I think somebody threw a throwback back there when the person wasn't ready for it, right? Those ropes are dangerous. Just because somebody swims doesn't mean we need to throw a rope. Like, you need to connect with them. And there's the kayaker there can handle this. Okay. And is handling it.
Okay, kick with me. Good job. You got this?
That's a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
You're all right. We're going to get you
That's
over
a,
here.
That's not a fun feeling.
Emily's raft, okay?
This is just good kayaking.
Yep. I got it. I'll cry later.
Okay.
Right.
Good
now,
job. Hey. Hey.
Thank
good
you.
Job. Good job.
Really?
So with a higher flow PFD, that wouldn't have been as much underwater. Like, that's just, yeah.
Yep.
This is pretty cool. I'm stoked to see them trying to flip it mid-river. This is a sweet video. Whoever shared this, like this, just showing that like they're not making it, but more these big heavy gearboats. This is like a 6, 7, 8 people flip. So sweet. This is a cool video.
Woo. All right. Where's my boat?
Right. Anyway, that's my review of that. I think. Turn this off. Just to sum this one up, they should have made that line. Like, that's they should have made that line. And like, using a good downstream ferry and pulling is key. You just can't push these big boats and you can't push them through that kind of water. And so, just a reminder for those of you that like are learning the boat, getting into boating, please learn the downstream ferry. Please focus on pulling first and pushing later. Those are big things. And I know I'm gonna get a lot of flack for this, but like, jumping out is not a bad idea. Like, if you can get clear of something that can hurt you, why not? That's how I feel about when people are getting beat down to holes. Especially in a gearboat, like if you can jump out and just be free of that mess, sometimes it's just nice to not take a chance. And that one video on the Middle Fork, the Tap and Falls one with the guys giving that awesome blow by blow, like one of those dudes I think got liver damage from the flip. And so, and so being in the boat doesn't make it. I mean, you can be there to attach a rope if you need to, but that's about all you're doing. So if you can jump out and you're getting beat down, and you want to save yourself first, smart. This woman who she didn't want to go up into a dory sideways, or man, I'm assuming it's a woman for some reason. It could have been a dude, but like, could have just, I mean, jumping free was, I thought, smart. And tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, I probably am wrong. If I'm going sideways into a dory, I'm not sure I would think about it. I might, but I hope I do the same because I don't want to be in a boat hitting a dory sideways. I just don't. Okay. So this is a good reminder to me to teach more downstream fairing and pulling to my guide trainees. Yeah. Yeah. If they're, especially if they're rowing, paddleboarding too, but like when people are learning to guide, you know, it's just huge pulling downstream. If you're just teaching push the whole time, like that works on like a lot of rivers, especially that class three rivers that you memorize, but that skill set doesn't move somewhere else. You know, when people come to work for us on the Middle Fork of the Salmon, if all they can do is push, they just won't make it. Like they're out. Like you have to have a, you have to pull too. And then if you want to run high water, you have to downstream ferry. So yeah, yeah, the downstream ferry is huge. Halder, seeing the second, yeah, I agree, man. When I saw that second boat, I did not want to be in that. And they were down for a while. That was the where the one person was gasping for air too. So if you can just jump and take a deep breath and jump and be free, like I'm not super opposed to that. Yep. Well, sweet. I think that's the end of this episode. Thanks everybody for watching. Don't forget Chris Davis tomorrow night live at 6 p.m. to talk about drowning. And yeah, see you next tomorrow.